The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's time for another Brad Sesmatt Show here on this Wednesday morning. Hope you all are having a great day so far here this Wednesday. And it's hot outside now, guys. It felt like just yesterday. I was telling you that I was coming into work, driving east down to Scottsdale, and there was snow on the peaks of the mountain. And now my buckle is burning my hand already again. We've lost it, guys. I think I told you 2 weeks ago, man. It was 70 degrees when I walked in the morning, and that was awesome. I'm Devin Henry. It's hot outside now because we live in Arizona, and it's June. With that being said, I'm happy if it only hits 100 degrees this time of year because it's still better than what we usually have. Nonetheless, guys, I think I should shut up. It's time to keep moving along. You know, let's get the show on the road with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance, guys. Brad is licensed with Sagicor. He will go out and he will talk to people about, do you have it all figured out? You don't have to have it all figured out, guys. This is just a call that you should make to see if maybe you got all your I's dotted and all your T's crossed. Just go and check it up. It don't have to be something crazy where you are today saying, this is the plan. Just work on it. Get it ready just in case. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. We're going to have Jordan Hamm. I'm going to bother him on his day off today to check out what's going on here with the D-backs draft picks, because they had 7 draft picks in around the top 70. 5 of them are pitchers. It's pretty obvious that they need some more pitching in the pitching staff, nonetheless, and in the bullpen, but really? 5 out of 7? We'll talk to Jordan about the likelihood of those guys actually coming through the majors here in the next couple of years, or what they can mean for this team in future seasons, because it's very not likely that one of them might pop up this year into the majors. Also, we'll talk some Phoenix Suns action as we grow even closer to the draft and the fact that, yeah, there is still no point guard on this team, and also what the Toronto Raptors are doing right in the NBA Finals series against the Golden State Warriors. Game 3 tonight. Guys, I love the NBA Finals. And also, since I'm Devin Henry, we will talk motorsports, what's going on locally, nationally, and what's wrong right now with motorsports. Why are people not going to the track? Why are people not watching it on television? Why are people not engaging on social media anymore? No, it's not as simple as, excuse me, it's probably what you're thinking right now. There's a lot that goes into it when it comes to anyone losing revenue, ad revenue, and views on international and national sports right now when it comes to the United States of America. Plenty coming up on today's show. We will start with the Arizona Diamondbacks, though, because, well, the draft was just a couple days ago, and like I mentioned, 5 pitchers with their 7 picks in those top 80 selections. The reason why is because so far in these last couple of games against the Dodgers, they've given up 12 runs and they've only scored 1 themselves. I guess that's kind of what happens. This is the team that you got to show up against. Even if you lose against them, I'll take a 3-1 loss. I'm okay with that. They are who we thought they are, or at least that's kind of what's coming more so down to. They started off the season pretty dang good, if I had to say so, but now that the schedule is supposed to be a little bit easier than what it was when they started the season, they're backtracking. Like I said, I'll take a 3-1 loss to the Dodgers. What's not going to be very tolerable is a 9-0 loss to the Dodgers. They play again today in just a couple of hours, and after that you got the Blue Jays, you got the Phillies, you got the Nats. Pretty good opponents, but when you look at, hey, they need to take on the Rockies again here in a few weeks. They need to take on the Giants twice in 3 series in a couple of weeks here. They have another 3-game series against the Dodgers. Once they're done with the Giants in a 4-game series, they have the Dodgers again, then the Rockies again. There are so many NL West games coming up here in the month of June and going into the beginning of July. Those are the games that you have to win against the Giants and the Rockies and the Padres, because I think that this team can be in contention for that second wildcard spot when we are in September. With that being said, the dog days of summer baseball are hard to get through. And when you're giving up just run after run after run, it's okay when you beat the Mets 6-5, but then when you lose to them 5-4 or you lose to the Rockies 11-10, yeah, there's obvious bullpen issues when it comes to we can't let these guys score so much. With that being said, you look back a couple of years ago, the one thing that I couldn't believe is that the reason why the Arizona Diamondbacks made the wild card game a couple of years ago was through their pitching, especially with that really recent addition of Zach Greinke that started the year. Well, now you lose J.D. Martinez last year, Paul Goldschmidt this year. Yeah, you expect the batting to be a little bit more diminished than, say, it was when David Peralta is your really only star hitter that you really want to rely on game in and game out, with some others kind of in the background helping out. But then I still didn't expect them to beat the Giants 18-2 and 10-4 back at the end of May. Okay, so you know what? Maybe the bats aren't doing that bad because they scored, what is that, 17 runs against the Mets? No, the Mets ain't the greatest team in the world, but still, you're scoring runs. I didn't think that once again we would be having this issue where we are looking at the pitching staff. We'll talk to Jordan Hamm a little bit later about what that pitching staff is going to look like in the future because of those five selections. And my biggest concern when it comes to any draft in any sport, especially hockey and baseball, there's no guarantee that any player that you draft will wind up playing for you in the pros. That's just a fact. That's one of the scariest things about being an athlete in those sports. You might spend your entire career in Double A. You might play your entire career playing Triple A and end your career with the Reno Aces. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. They still make money. You know, it's not a bad career, but you want to be in the majors. And there's no guarantee that these draft picks, first of all, are going to sign with the D-backs. Same thing happened last year where their first round pick, didn't even bother to sign with them. This year, their first three selections are high schoolers. Yes, that's legal, unlike the NBA. But nonetheless, you got to hope that you can persuade these high schoolers to sign with you because you can't keep losing these top draft picks. Because the more you have, the more likely you're going to find some in the MLB. I'm going to step off the D-backs talk for a little bit because we are going to have plenty more of that with Jordan Hamm. Not only the draft, but what's going on with the D-backs right now is they just can't seem to find that kind of winning stretch that they were able to do when the schedule was a little bit more difficult back in March and April. I do want to stay on baseball, though, because I do think it's fun to talk about what's going on over at Arizona State. And the reason why is because, well, Arizona State did really, really well this year. The end result was not really what I was hoping for, but you look at what this baseball team this year, and it kind of reminds you of what the Arizona State basketball team did last year. Baseball was 38-19, much like the basketball team was this year, the last undefeated team in the nation. Then towards the end of the year, of course, not some great wins. Those losses against Cal and Stanford definitely hurt, but this team still made regionals. This team was still in, you know, the playoffs, the NCAA baseball tournament. I thought that this team was good enough to not have to worry about getting knocked out in regionals. Well, they end up losing to Southern Mississippi twice, 15-3 the first game. You beat Stony Brook to keep those chances alive, and in this double elimination, you're knocked out once again by Southern Mississippi, giving up 28 runs in two games to Southern Mississippi. Now, that last game was only a one-run loss, and it was a heartbreaker. But I did really expect a little bit more from this team when it came to the tournament. But when you look at this team, and you look at the turnaround, the fact that they were almost 20 games over 500 this year, that's not at all what we were thinking going into the year. Because looking back to last season, when a pitcher went up onto the mound in relief, I did not trust that that pitcher was going to get the job done. This year, they got it done. And it shows in the fact that Hunter Bishop is going 10th overall. He went 10th overall in the MLB draft, and Arizona State Sun Devil went number 10 to a major league team. Head coach Tracy Smith should give himself a pat on the back. I think that this season was phenomenal, but just didn't quite get what they wanted to at season's end. There's always next year. Tracy Smith's job is safe for next year, I would like to think. Obviously, I don't know what's going on internally at Arizona State for the baseball team when you're only 500 on the road and under 500 in neutral site. But regardless, this is a team that will bring back a lot of strong players that can make it to Super Regionals or to their first World Series appearance in a very, very long time. We'll take a break here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Bring it back. Jordan Hamm will be with us on the other side talking Arizona Diamondbacks draft and also what can they do to pick themselves back up heading deep into summertime. I'm Devin Henry here on Sports 360 AZ. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. Welcome back, everyone, to the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports 360 AZ. Devin Henry along for the ride on this Wednesday morning, and we haven't done this in a while, guys. We're going to jump in with Jordan Hamm, our Sports 360, baseball expert, baseball analyst, recruiting expert, about 10 other things here, and you can go check out all of his content on sports360az.com. Lots of good stuff going on, and of course, our front page is filled with baseball from the MLB draft. Seven picks for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But first of all, Jordan, I'm bothering you on your day off. What am I making you miss out on? Anything important today that I'm going, Jordan, you can't do it today. You're with me today.
We're good so far. If it was a little bit later in the day, you might have been impeding on some Netflix time for me.
Oh, okay.
So the Apple TV would be raring in a couple of hours. So I think we're still in the clear.
All right, good. I'm glad I'm not. I know how important Netflix time is, first of all. You got to have that. You got to have some TV time on your days off, guys. But I do want to get on to what's going on the turf. We can talk about the D-backs kind of wishy-washy winning and losing right now. But the number one thing that I want to get to here is the draft picks. First of all, the first three picks are all high schoolers, which after kind of a scare from last year, losing your first round pick, because for those of you who don't know, unlike the NBA draft, the draftees can say no. They can say, nah, I'm good. I'm going to go back and play college ball or whatever you want to do. So I guess my biggest question here is, there's five pitchers and seven picks. What is the likelihood of any of them actually getting up into the majors here in the next year or two?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And that's why they, you know, every MLB team puts in so many resources scouting these guys to see if they can navigate. They know what the talent is right now, but the key is, especially for those high schoolers, how good are they going to be 4 years from now, 5 years from now? What's their ceiling and how can they get them to that? And really, you know, you look through past years, you look through the 2013 draft, presumed to be a pretty darn good draft. There were a lot of misses in that first round. But I think with the high schoolers, what the Diamondbacks were looking for is they're in a unique situation because they had seven day one picks. And for those of you who don't know, it's the first two rounds of the draft with a couple of competitive balance rounds in there where it's, you know, two to four picks for teams based on various factors. But it just clicked just right for the Diamondbacks that they had seven of those picks. And that comes from AJ Pollock leaving, Pat Corbin leaving, them signing above a certain amount of money, that meant the Diamondbacks got two more picks at 33 and 34. The Cardinals traded the Diamondbacks a pick in the Paul Goldschmidt trade. The Diamondbacks being one of the a smaller market team, they get a competitive balance pick. So it's really kind of a perfect storm for Mike Hazen and this crew to go ahead and go through and really try to replenish this farm system. So I think that's really why they went for broke on a lot of these guys. They went for a lot of high upside guys because they had the draft capital to go ahead and do that, because the way it works with the draft, you get every pick gets slotted for a value. I'm looking at the draft rankings right now. Pick 16, Corbin Carroll, the Diamondbacks first round pick, the approximate pick value is $3.75 million. So the Diamondbacks are allocated a certain amount of money to try to sign these players, and they had the most in the big leagues by over $2 million. They had over $16 million to sign all of their draft picks this year. So when you have that sort of flexibility, you can kind of mix and match and find some guys that are high upside that may want to go to college, and you can overspend on those guys and then later in the draft maybe have go a little bit below the slotted value for other guys that may be kind of fringe players and things like that, to go ahead and try to get as many of those guys signed and through your minor leagues as quickly as possible.
There's a lot of games going on when it comes to the MLB draft because there's so much freedom for some of these athletes who get drafted compared to especially like the NFL draft and stuff like that. There's freedom for the athletes to actually negotiate to the point where I'm not going, because people talk about it all the time, like, you know, Zion should just say, no, I'm just going to go back to college. And it's like, well, you can't really do that in the NBA draft. And looking at what this team, you know, when you give up 22 runs to the Rockies in three games, it's very obvious that you need help in your pitching staff. And like you mentioned, it's the million-dollar question. Is this, are these players actually ever going to get up to the majors in time to kind of fix that bullpen and fix that farm system? But was there anything where you're watching and you go, yeah, there's five pitchers, but there's something else. Is there something else that the D-backs kind of missed that maybe you would have wished that, you know, maybe only three or four pitchers and they should have went after this position instead?
I think it's tough to gauge because obviously the immediate need of the Diamondbacks, these guys aren't going to help those immediate needs. This is really about getting a baseline and getting a good foundation for the farm system to get those guys up and through. And, you know, some of these guys may be high-value targets that are then traded for potential big leaguers in the future. So it's really tough to gauge how a team stands right now versus where they're going to be once these guys actually have the time to hit the big leagues. I think the strategy, this will be Mike Hazen's third draft with the Diamondbacks. I think the strategy for him, because he came in and the farm system was pretty darn bare. It was one of the worst in baseball. So I think the strategy for the first couple of years was to get those established college players so that they had that experience. They were a little bit further along in their development. They could get up through the bigs a little bit quicker, or through the minor leagues, excuse me, a little bit quicker. And then with this draft, it was, okay, we have the money to go for those high upside guys. We have a couple potential frontline starters that we could draft. If we hit on one of those, things are going to be looking pretty good moving forward, you know, a couple of years down the line. So I think that was kind of the change in strategy this year. I think the strategy that they took, while it was surprising they took five pitchers in day one of their seven picks, I think that was the right move. And you look at all of these guys, and it's just upside upon upside. You know, Blake Walston is a guy, he was picked 26th overall. That was the pick that they got because they couldn't sign their first round pick last year. And he's a lefty pitcher. And everything I've been reading is this guy's potential is so high. He stands at 6'5" and 175 pounds. And
okay,
so you can very realistically think this guy's kind of built like Gumby right now. Like, you could add 30 to 40 pounds on this guy, and he's already throwing 93 right now. What's that going to do when you add some major league weight? You get him in a major league weight system. How much higher is that fastball going to go up? And he was also a high school quarterback. He won two state titles as a pitcher. He won a state title as a quarterback. You know, just seems like a ton of athleticism and that sort of thing. And then Brennan Malone is another guy that I think really jumps out to me. Pick number 33, he's from the IMG Academy. And Devin, you know, that place is a factory to get people to the next level in multiple sports, in football, basketball, baseball. Brennan Malone, another big-bodied guy, 6'4", 205 pounds, and just already has that 99-mile-an-hour fastball. So I think those are the two guys that it's like, if you can kind of start to see the future of the Diamondbacks rotation, I have a feeling one of those two guys could be leading the way or be a key contributor to it a couple years down the road. So that's why I like what the Diamondbacks have done so far in their strategy. They're just, you know, going for broke. And, you know, Derek Ladner, the scouting director after day one, was talking to the media, and he said, we weren't taking guys because we thought we could sign them. We were taking guys because we knew we could sign them. So that's kind of the mentality they've had, is just like, go after it. Let's go best available, not worry about signability, and get as many of these guys in here and just try to go, you know, crazy upside.
And I want to talk about that first round pick, one of the two non-pitchers selected in that day one draft bunch. Corbin Carroll, Lakeside High School, so another high schooler here. Assuming that they do sign this one and that's all said, done, and ready to go, what is something that D-backs fans need to know about this kid coming up through the farm system?
he does a little bit of everything. He's a very good defensive center fielder. He's an outfielder, a lefty thrower, lefty hitter, a little bit undersized. He's 5'10", 165 pounds, but he has some sneaky pop in there. And there's really, all the scouting reports I have read is he kind of reminded me of, like, in basketball, like the Sean Marion type, like a guy who does a little bit of everything and a guy that really can, you know, fill a lot of roles for you, a good base runner, doesn't have many holes in his game. So I think that was kind of a safer high school pick, and a guy I think was slotted a little bit higher, but just kind of the way the draft fell a little bit, I think some people really prioritized some of the college players early on, especially in the outfield, and that made him fall a little bit to 16, and the Diamondbacks jumped on that opportunity. But yeah, a little bit smaller of a guy, but everything I've heard, he is a very versatile player and actually played in the same little league as Jake Lamb did.
Well, that is interesting. Hopefully we'll see him up through the system here in the next couple of years. Obviously, there's a reason why there's single A, double A, triple A, then the majors. It takes time sometimes. We're talking here to Jordan Hamm, our own Jordan Hamm, going through some baseball. Be sure to check out the Diamonds in the Desert podcast. Plenty of more D-backs talk on sports360az.com. I do also want to talk on your recruiting knowledge when it comes to high school football. A fresh recruiting roundup on this week's Brad Sesmap Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. You can check that out before and after D-backs games, which I'm sure, Jordan, you wish that you were a part of that pre-Brad Sesmap, post-Brad Sesmap, and then the entire D-backs broadcast too. But for now, we'll keep you here at Sports 360. But you can go check this out on the website as well. A lot of summer commitments. Some big names, Tommy Christakos from Chaparral, Cade Bennett from Notre Dame Prep, Brock Lochnikar. There's just really big names where you're months away from the season. Why are these athletes assigned to commit now in June and May as opposed to either waiting towards the beginning of the season or going into the season, rack up your offers, and commit later?
Well, I think there are two reasons. A lot of the guys that are committing already have those offers in place. They're already, you know, sitting at double-digit offers all the way up to, you know, 35 offers if you're looking at Keely Ringo, the top guy in the state. And the other thing is spots fill up in these recruiting classes, especially for the – like the highly recruited players, the highly recruitable schools, the LSUs, the Alabamas, the top-flight programs, they fill up pretty quickly. A lot of guys may – if they get a committable offer, they could turn around right away and make a commitment. And then all of a sudden – you may be in limbo if you have that spot available. So a lot of the guys, the recruiting process with social media, I think really with jobs like mine where you're talking to recruits consistently, that can wear guys down. And there's a bit of a recruiting fatigue. And every, you know, commitment interview that I do, I ask, how big of a fatigue was there? What did you enjoy this process? Was this a fun process? Was this a stressful process? And I've heard the whole gamut of guys who are like, I loved it. This is a once in a lifetime thing. And there was a case, the first time I really heard it was from Christian Kirk, where he was like, I am glad this is over. This was a great, I'm so blessed. I am so blessed that these schools came and talked to me, but I am glad it's over. I'm glad I'm going to Texas A&M. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me. So I think a lot of these guys, once they know and have a pretty good idea, like this is my front runner, and they do the due diligence, they go on their visit, they just want to wrap it up. And then they can focus on their senior year. They can, you know, look ahead a little bit and try to get bigger, stronger, prep for the college game, and really just have that last little bit of high school that they can have before they go off to college. Because if these guys aren't graduating early, pretty much the first week after graduation in the spring, they're off to college. And they're, you know, in the weight room, they're already practicing with their teams. They want to be a kid for a little bit. So I think that's why a lot of these guys, if they are more established, they're going to go ahead and try to make that commitment either early on in the high school season or before the high school season.
And these guys specifically are high school, just finished their high school junior year, I should say, and going into their senior year. And when you're on a team like Chaparral or Notre Dame Prep, there's the expectations, especially now, of being either in that Open Division 18 playoff or being in contention for your classification. What am I trying to say here? Conference State Championship, I guess, is what we're going to call it now. It ends up being.
Yeah.
But when it comes to some of these athletes who are committing in spring and in summer, do you think that kind of changes their outlook or maybe some of their attitude towards playing their senior year, because now there's no longer this weight of commitment? I know where I'm going and I know what I'm worth.
I don't think so. I think there's still a lot of pride in a state championship. I was talking to Malik Reed, the linebacker over at Chandler, who already has multiple state championship rings. And I asked him about his timeline, and he's like, I want to get this decision out of the way because I want to win another state championship. My only focus during the football season is to win another state championship with my guys. So I think there's quite a bit of pride. And when you look at like a Saguaro type team that has been so highly touted, but there are still those people that'll say, well, they are in 4A. Like, they aren't playing the best of the best competition. I think that pisses off the coaching staff, that pisses off players on that program, and said, yeah, we want to get in that open division. We want to show that we are the best of the best, and really have that last little bit of bragging rights before we go off to college and on our, you know, pursue our various careers and that sort of thing. So I don't think it necessarily affects many of their, the sport that they're playing and being recruited for. I don't think that affects that there. I think, if anything, guys may kind of reel back on any of the extra sports they're playing. You know, Austin Jackson was a basketball player and a football player. When he made his commitment, he said, I'm done with basketball. Jake Smith was a lacrosse player, and that really helped him on the football field. But he said, once he made his commitment, I'm going to go ahead and retire. He actually came back and played a little bit for Notre Dame Prep towards the end of the year. But I think a lot of the extracurriculars kind of go away, and it's now I'm going to focus up on what this college wants me to do and get prepped for once I step on that college campus.
Our own Jordan Hamm here on the Brad Sismatch Show. Be sure to check out lots more baseball content on sports360az.com. And also the recruiting roundup on Brad Sismatch Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. Jordan, thanks for joining me, man. And we will see you next week once again for plenty of things going on the website, I'm sure, man. Thanks again.
All right. Appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you, Jordan. He's going to go and watch some Netflix, what it is. Maybe that's our next question next time we talk to Jordan here on the Brad Sismatch Show. But for now, we're going to take a break, bring you on back. We're going to talk some NBA Finals action, a quick whip around what's going on here in sports in the state of Arizona. This is the Brad Sismatch Show on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Devin Henry. In 1981, James Naismith created the game of basketball. And much like everything else, Americans stole that and made it their own thing. And then eventually they ended up turning it into something very, very large, something very, very major. For the first time in the history of the NBA, there was a finals game played in Canada. The first time that the NBA finals had ever been played outside of the United States of America. The very first ever game in the NBA played in Canada was on November 1st, 1946, when the New York Knickerbockers defeated the Toronto Huskies 68, low scoring, to 66. And man, that 1946 Knickerbockers logo is creepy as heck, man. Don't look it up. Just take my word for it. Don't look that up. I shouldn't have said anything. But nonetheless, we are watching history. Not only was the first ever NBA Finals game in Canada, but it was also won. So far, you know, now it's 1-1 in Canada for a Canadian team in the NBA. But say you look at the NHL, about a third of the NHL is Canadian teams because, you know, hockey is more of a Canadian sport than an American sport. Well, now basketball has been created more into an American sport than, say, a Canadian sport. There's only one team in Canada, and quite frankly, for a very long time, they weren't that good. Even when they were good, like the past couple of years, they weren't good enough to play against the best. Now the series is tied. We are heading back to Golden State, out to Oakland for game number 3 tonight of the NBA Finals. And take note of what the big men of Toronto did back in game 1 to slow down the Golden State Warriors. Specifically, I completely forgot that Marc Gasol was on the Toronto Raptors. I just completely forgot about that because, well, first of all, they are the Toronto Raptors. Most people can only name Kyle Lowry and then some other guy named Kawhi Leonard as the only couple players on the Toronto Raptors that someone can think of down here in the States. And the fact that, well, I just forgot that trade happened. I just completely forgot that Marc Gasol was moved over to Toronto. But look at what the big men have done playing against the Golden State Warriors, who particularly usually play small ball, but you would think would be better at it with the addition of DeMarcus Cousins now coming back. They are out-rebounding the Warriors on the offensive glass consistently, and those are turning into major second-chance points for the Toronto Raptors. No, it did not work nearly as well in game number two, but game number two was way closer than game number one was. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Pascal's last name right now because I haven't looked enough into it, but nonetheless, Gasol and Pascal have been doing a phenomenal job right now on the offensive boards and even defensively for the Toronto Raptors. And that has somehow kind of swapped this series around where a lot of people believe that it would be Golden State in four. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes seven games. Now, of course, I love basketball. I love championship series. If the Super Bowl could be a three-game series, I would be happy. I'd be more than happy with that. I would love seeing championship sports because they are more intense than almost anything else that you will get throughout the entire year of whatever sport that you happen to love. NASCAR has even created that excitement for making playoffs in racing. I still think it's a stupid idea, but I'd still love to watch it. That's just me. And of course, everyone is going to have the conspiracy theories that, yeah, I went to Game 7 because they make more money, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, they do. But I love to watch it. If no one will watch it, then they wouldn't fix the games to make it seven games. No, I love watching playoff basketball. And I was afraid that this might not be good playoff basketball. The first two games of the series was good basketball. And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, I've said it a few times, maybe not on the show because I haven't been here that long, but Golden State, they don't even need Kevin Durant to be competitive for a championship. Now, don't put me on your blog. Local video, radio, sports host, whatever the heck I'm going to be called in that, says that Kevin Durant does nothing for the Golden State Warriors. Okay. KD puts the Warriors over the top drastically. Drastically, it's too much. But you forget, they won championships without him already. They won championships with players that they drafted and raised their own in Oakland. They've done it. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, all born and raised in the NBA at least, with Golden State. Imagine this happens. I know that the Warriors love to play small ball, but they keep Thompson, they keep Green. Durant goes somewhere else. Do you take that little bit of extra money and you tell Boogie Cousins, why don't you stick around a little bit longer? Let's do another 2 years, buddy. We have the money to pay you now. I don't care what you say. I still see that as a team that can make a finals run where your starting five includes Thompson, Curry, Green, DeMarcus Cousins, and throw out any other Warrior on the current roster for that number five. I think that's a finals competing team right there, even if KD joins LeBron in LA, which is a completely real possibility at this chance. The fact that Golden State has homegrown their talent is amazing, but the fact that Toronto did the same, even with DeMar DeRozan, they used that homegrown talent to actually make collateral to get another star player. And that has helped propel them into the championship. There's two different ways to have homegrown talent and win championships. One way is the Golden State Warriors. Home raised, you got the right talent in the draft, you make those little changes that are necessary and a good coaching staff and a good front office to build that team up. You're five straight years in the finals. The Toronto Raptors took a different change though. Basically, everything that they have acquired these past few years to make them finals ready came from trades or came from collateral from their own homegrown people to make them into the team that they are now. There's two different ways through the NBA draft and free agency to make championship teams. And these two in the NBA finals are them. Keep an eye out, Phoenix Suns. This might be what you want to be watching. I'm excited for Game 3. Who's it going to be? Heck, man, I don't know. I just like to watch good basketball. That's why I don't throw out a heck of a lot of predictions. I just love to watch. I do want to whip through real quick what else is going on in the state of Arizona. We talked Diamondbacks. Last two games against the Dodgers were losses. They will play at 12:40 first pitch today against the Dodgers one more time before moving on to play their next series. Meanwhile, the Arizona Rattlers, I do need to throw this out here. Perfect. The Arizona Rattlers have a perfect season so far in the Indoor Football League. They did last year too, though, and then they would end up losing their first-round playoff game. There's enough teams, though, now in the IFL that they are actually having a first-round bye. That's cool. The Tucson Sugar Skulls actually look like they might be in the playoffs, too, in their first year of existence. So I really like that. Also, the Arizona Rattlers this weekend completed their first-ever franchise shutout. If you guys like scoring, you need to go to an indoor football league game. 56-0. You will not see that in the NFL week in and week out like you will in indoor football. I like watching scoring. It's small fields. They throw the ball really funny, and they're small teams. I like it. Regardless, the best team in the state of Arizona still remains the Arizona Rattlers, who are undefeated and look to be the favorites to win another championship. First, they got to beat the Tucson Sugar Skulls at home this Saturday. Another double Arizona game. I absolutely love those. Might be a fun game to go out and watch this Saturday, 5 p.m. first kick. Also, the Phoenix Mercury 1-1 on the season after winning both of their preseason games. Won a thriller on Friday against the Aces 86-84. They play actually tomorrow. Yeah, the Minnesota Lynx, they will play tomorrow. So, I mean, there's a possibility of two championships in Arizona in 2019. They are not the Cardinals, not the D-backs, not the Suns, not the Coyotes. I enjoy watching those teams, though. We'll take one more break on the other side. Might there be your favorite Honda Civic at ISM Raceway in 2020? We'll talk about it here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Devin Henry on Sports 360 AZ. So it's no secret that NASCAR wants a fourth manufacturer in the sport. Why? Because you want to grow awareness, you want to get more ad revenue in there, and there's something that NASCAR has that almost no other American series has, and that's brand recognition to the athletes on the track. If you happen to own a Toyota Camry, what's it called? Camry, and you see Kyle Busch win at Pocono this past weekend, and you see a Toyota Camry go into victory lane, and you own a Toyota Camry, you're kind of like, yeah, I got a Camry too. That's cool, right? You know, he just won. Okay, maybe you're not that excited about it, but nonetheless, it's cool. It's brand identification. People can relate to those vehicles, even though they are absolutely nothing like the car that you bought. Also in shape and size, really, it's just kind of the grill and the taillight stickers that they put on there. But regardless, people like that. Now, there was a rumor about a month ago or so that Richard Petty Motorsports, who's kind of on the down and down, they're having a hard time right now, racking up funds. There was a rumor that next year they're moving to Honda. For those of you who don't know, there's only three manufacturers right now in NASCAR. Chevy, Toyota, and then also, of course, what people were hoping was Dodge. Is not, but I think that a lot of people would rather have something beyond Honda join into NASCAR, to join the Ford, to join the Chevy, to join the Toyota. With that being said, you know, they want Dodge to come back, they want Pontiac to come back, but Honda might be a good thing. For one, Honda is already an IndyCar. No, when you watch IndyCar, you don't go, hey, look, there's a Honda right there going 230 miles an hour. No, that's not what an IndyCar looks like. But now there has been another rumor thrown out by Motorsports Week, and more of a report rather than a rumor. And my brother's the one who found this, is that down in the snack group, I don't know what it is, snack tent almost. For those of you who don't know, there's a thing called the Indianapolis 500. Big event. So manufacturers have certain tents. There's a tent for fans and for employees, if you will, of the manufacturer to go in, and it's a nice little VIP area. There's snacks and stuff like that. And for some reason, my brother knows that, like, it's really good snacks. I don't know how he knows that because he's never been to an IndyCar race before, but whatever. Supposedly, the vice chairman and president of NASCAR walked into that snack tent full of Honda executives. It's just a report. A month after, there was a report or a rumor that one of the biggest names in NASCAR was moving to Honda. An Accord might actually look kind of cool going up on the racetrack. Why is this important? Because NASCAR needs more coverage. Well, maybe not you think so, but they definitely think so, just like any other sport would believe so. Ratings are down, track attendance is down, everything is down right now. When you look at IndyCar, something that they have lost, that they've really, really lost, and they're never going to get it back, is that brand, well, I guess they've never had it, brand identification. There's Chevys, and then there's Hondas in IndyCar. You wouldn't know that looking at an IndyCar, though. They all look the same. They legitimately all look the same. You're not going to get that recognition. You're not going to get that relationship between fan and vehicle that you're watching on TV. They essentially came from sprint cars, which don't look anything like any sort of vehicle ever. NASCAR, though, has that ability to let fans see their own personal vehicle go out and win a race. I own a Chevy Silverado, and when I watch those Friday night truck races, I'm kind of like, Chevy Silverado won the race. I drive a Chevy Silverado. You know, that's how it is. Even though, you know, the trucks that they're designed after are way newer than the Silverado that I have. And the trucks don't actually look like real trucks because they're smaller than the cars that NASCAR runs. There's identification. There's recognition. I understand that that's a Chevy Silverado that just won the race. I understand that that's a Ford Fusion or a Ford Mustang that just won the race. Or a Ford Supra nowadays, anyway. So, I think it's really, really a good thing for the sport to go out and get a Honda Accord or something to join up. And Toyota needs more cars. There's only five Toyotas in the field week in and week out. That needs to be more, but that also runs down to the fact that there's only 37 cars when there used to be 45 a few years ago. It's too expensive to run these NASCARs. That's a NASCAR. But anyway, sidetracking again. Having something new in NASCAR when it comes to the manufacturer is something that I've been wanting for a very long time, because that means that there's more interest in the sport. People who own Hondas, whether it be an SUV or a car or whatever, might be more likely to go, hey, I really like that Bubba Wallace dude because he drives a Honda. I would like to see that. I would like to see more brand identification, more interest in the sport of motorsports. Will we see it? Maybe, maybe not. But what I do know is that ISM Raceway in Avondale, Arizona hosts the championship in 2020 for NASCAR. And you can go on over to sports360az.com. The Arizona Race Report, hosted by yours truly, is up. The new edition is up this week. Talking a little bit about what's going on locally here on dirt tracks. And also, we take a look at the NASCAR points as we get closer and closer to the semifinal race here at ISM Raceway. So really excited for that. Be sure to go check out more content on sports360az.com. Like we talked with Jordan Hamm, glad to have him on the show today. Plenty more baseball action up on sports360az.com. As well, also some motorsports stuff, and also be sure to check out Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona throughout the week. Lots of football action from high school, college, and the pros. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show. Brad will be back tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow, but I'll be over there where Jared Nielsen is currently wrapping together our beautiful show that we put on here about 4 days a week on sports360az.com. Glad to have everyone along for the ride. Have a phenomenal rest of your Wednesday. Brad will be with you tomorrow here on the Brad Sesmatt Show.